Today's shiur in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Mem Gimel. And we are going to pick up in the middle of a series of drashos that Ula made on the parsha of the Parah Aduma. And as we brought down yesterday in the shiur, some of them will contradict the previous drasha that we refer to as Mashma Motzi Miyad Mashma. The new Mashma is going to change around the din from the previous Mashma. So procedure number two, or the next procedure, is going to be different than the previous procedure in terms of some of the dinim. And other times it's Mashma Mimela. No, the second new din is going to have the similar dinim as the first one. And Ula is going to go through the entire parasha of the Parah Aduma. And we began doing this yesterday. And we pick up on Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, seven lines on the top, darshtein the pasuk v'lokach Elazar hakohen midamo b'yetzbo, that Elazar has to go and take the blood with his finger. Now, we already had the word Elazar previously, so what's the chiddush over here to tell me Elazar has to do this? So it depends. We had the machlokes Rav Shmuel as to whether the shchita of the Parah Aduma can be done by a zar. Rav's opinion was, no, it had to be done by a kohen. And Shmuel's opinion was, no, it could be done by a zar, because the shachad osol lefanav said that somebody else shechted in front of Elazar. So according to Shmuel, it's very simple. The reason why it now tells us v'lokach Elazar hakohen midamo b'yetzbo is l'shmuel l'hadur yali Elazar, to tell us that Elazar has to go do the spritzing of the blood towards the Heichal, in that general direction. Again, we're not in the Mesa Mikdash, not in the Mishkan. This is not a mitzvah of a karban. This is the din of Parah Aduma, which is why it's called the Chatas. It's not a karban. And therefore, to Shmuel's opinion that a non-Kohen could do the Shlita, so now we have to turn it back to the Kohen, Elazar, to Lokach Elazar HaKohen Midamo B'Etzba. So Shmuel had to real Elazar. So this is what we said before. This is an example of mashma, motzi miyad mashma. The previous din is now changed around. According to Rav, it's not that way. Ein miyut achamiyut el rabos. Rav said that it bedavka had to be a kohen, Elazar, that did it before. So therefore, just like Elazar had to do the shchita, Elazar has to do Kabbalah. So why does it reiterate that Elazar is the one? Belakach Elazar a kohen. So this is a miyut achamiyut. And a miyut achamiyut is El Rabos, comes to Marbe, and this tells us that a regular Kohen doesn't have to be Elazar, Skan, Kohen Gadol, but even a regular Kohen, Afilu Kohen Hedjot, be permissible to go and do the Hazor of the Parah Aduma towards the entrance of the Heichal. Now, that's the drasha of Lokach Elazar HaKohen Midamo B'Etzbo. We continue darshing in the Psukim. It says, Lokach HaKohen Eitz Erez Ve'ezo Vushni Soloas. It specifically says that the Kohen has to go take the Eitz Erez, the cedar wood, and the Ezo, that's the Hyssop, and the Shnitalos, that's the Loshon Shel Zohoris, that's the red piece of wool, and put them into Lokach, and bring them, HaKohen Eitz Erez Ve'ezo Vushni Soloas, Bishlich El Toch Sreif HaSapora, and he puts it into the fire that is burning the Parah Aduma. Now, why did you have to tell me again, HaKohen? So again, according to Shmuel, it's coming to teach us, L'mashma, Dafilu B'Kohen Hedjot. It doesn't have to be by the same Kohen that did it before, which was, according to Shmuel, L'kach Elazar HaKohen B'Davka. So here it's telling us that any Kohen is allowed to do this. So this is another example of Mashma is Motzi Miyad Mashma. So, very good. According to Rav, already it could be any Kohen. He already had that. So according to Rav, it's what do you need this for? I might have thought, even the lav gufo de parah ninu, since it's not actually part of the Parah Aduma itself, this Eitz Erez, Ezov, and Shisalos aren't intrinsically part of the Parah Aduma. They're thrown into the burning of the Parah Aduma, but they're not part of the Parah Aduma itself. I might have thought, Kiva the lav gufo de parah ninu, lowly boy Kohen. I don't even need a Kohen to do this. I would have thought a Zar can do this. So therefore, according to Rav, Itzrich, you need this over here, Kamash Vulon, to teach us that no, a Kohen Bedavka has to go and do this. So this is an example of Mashma Mimela, the same thing as a minute ago, that a regular Kohen didn't have to be a Lazar Kohen. It was the Miut Achamiut El Rabos to tell us Afil Kohen Hedjo could do the spritzing of the blood. So to over here, this is Mashma Mimela, continuing in this din, that a regular Kohen could do the Hashlochas Eitz Erez Ve'ezov Ushisolach El Tov Srefas HaParva. Very good. We continue darshin the psuk. Mula says v'chibes bigodov hakohen bichihuno. It tells us bedavka the kohen has to go and clean his begodim, wash his mercies begodim, and it tells us bichihuno. It says chibes bigodov hakohen. So in other words, he had to have been wearing the big day kahuna while he was doing this avodah. He couldn't wear chulin dika bigodim, as Rashi says. Hi kohen kro yiseru. It could have just said v'chibes bigodov. Why did it have to say HaKohen, though Havalei LeMichtav, El V'chibes B'Gadav, V'chulei. And therefore, I would have known on my own, Va'ano Yadana, the Ahar, the Iri Bei Koi. We're talking, obviously, the person that had done the spritzing, the person that had done the Eitz Eretz Ve'ezos Yishalas, of course, it's that same person has to go and wash his clothing. So why did it say, Begodov HaKohen? El Mismach Kohen HaBegodov, to connect the two. Klomar, Shele Big De Kohuna Nasis V'lo Big De Chol. Both according to Rav and according to Shul, had to be done by a Kohen, therefore, he had to wear the Big De Kohuna. The pasuk says at the end, "The tomei a kohen ado orev," that the kohen is tomei until nightfall, and that teaches us kohen b'chiyuno l'doros. That this teaches us by the additional of the word again, "B'tomei a kohen." So that kohen has to be the one doing this for all future generations. So this aspect of the avoda of the paraduma, this procedure in the paraduma, again I mentioned already yesterday a couple of times, it's not technically an avoda, but we'll use the terminology avoda, borrowed from korbanos, by the paraduma, so it has to be done by a kohen for all future generations as well. As Rashi says, l'lamid ala para, nasis l'doros, all future generations, we make a paraduma, should tzricha big dekuna. The Kohen has to be wearing his big dekuna. One might have thought that it's not an aboda in the Beis HaMikdash, it's not technically a carbon, so maybe you don't need to wear big dekuna, so kamash v'lan that you have to wear big dekuna. This is according to both Rav and according to Shmuel. Now the Gemara asks, Hanich l'man d'yomah l'doros b'kohen hedyot shapir. This works out very well according to the man d'yomah. It says that a regular kohen hedyot is allowed to do this. So therefore, you need a pasuk to tell me that he has to wear big day kohuna, shapir. Works out very, very well. This man d'yomah did not learn the gzeirah shavu chuka and did not say that we go from Elazar HaKohen to the kohen gadol for future generations, but a regular kohen. So therefore, you need a pasuk to tell me that the regular kohen, he also has to wear big day kohuna. But according to the Mandi Omar, Elo Mandi Omar, Lidoros Bekoin Godol, that we learned out the drasha of Chuka to tell me that no longer was the Skan Koin Godol allowed to do this, but the Paradum had to be done by the Koin Godol, Bechvodol, the Atzmo himself. So then, if you need the Koin Godol, so Hash the Koin Godol, Boin, and if you need to have the Koin Godol, Bikihuno mi boyin, do you need to tell me that it has to wear Big De Kohuna? If it's the Koin Godol, of course he has to wear Big De Kohuna. What would be the Hab? I mean it to say that you need the Koin Godol, but he doesn't have to wear Big De Kohuna. So it's a Kasha. Why does he have to tell me that? The Tomei HaKohen at Arif. What do you need the extra word HaKohen to teach me that he has to wear Big De Kohuna here for all future generations? So it says, you're right. And technically, you didn't have to tell me it because we could learn it out from a Kabbalah Homer. But Milsa, the Asi, the Kabbalah Homer, Torah, because of Lakra. You're right. You could have said, well, if I need a Kohen Gadol, so obviously he has to wear the Big De Kohuna. That's a Kabbalah Homer. So sometimes the Pasuk will go out of its way to teach us something through a drush of the Pasuk rather than rely upon a Kabbalah Homer. That's normal darshaning practice. Okay. Then Ula continues and he dashes up something further and he says, "Va'asaf ish tohar eis efer haporo v'hiniach michutz l'machaneh b'makom tohar." That's the whole pasuk. So what does it tell us over here? "Va'asaf ish tohar." Why does that tell me a man who is tohar? So ish comes to tell me l'hachshir es hazar, to come and tell me that this could be done even by a non-kohen. It doesn't say va'asaf kohen tohar. It says ish tohar. So now this is again an idea of mashma, motzi miyad mashma. So we're changing it around. It no longer has to be a kohen, so this is the din changing. So this is mashma, motzi miyad mashma. And it says over here, tahar, that's extra. Of course we're dealing with tahar. Why would we think we're dealing with a tahar person? So the word tahar comes to be lahashir se'isha, to allow a woman to do this as well. So that's the possibility. Yosaf ish tahar comes to tell me that it doesn't have to be a kohen, and it could even be a woman. And then it says, vihiniach. So it says, you should put it over there. So it means it has to be somebody who has das. Mi sheyesh bo das lahaniach. He has to intentionally put it there. So this comes to exclude a person who's a lav bar das. Therefore, yotzu, this comes to exclude a cheresh, a shota, and a katan. This comes to include these classical examples of people that aren't considered bar das. The cheresh is a person who never can't speak and he can't hear, which under most circumstances meant that he would not be a bar das. A shota is a person who's insane. He's not a mentally competent person. And a katan, even though he's a genius, right? The Vilna Gaon at 12 was a bigger genius than anybody around today. So nevertheless, he's not considered a bar das in halacha. So therefore, the cheresh, shota, and katan are excluded from being able to put it there. They have to go and be a person who has a bar das, v'hiniach, mechutz l'machaneh b'makom kadosh. Then the pasuk continues, Tanan Hasam, we learned in the Mishnah in Parah, it says, Hakol ksherim l'kadesh, everybody is able to do the kiddush of the water and the ashes, that's called the kiddush mechatos. Everybody can go and combine that. You don't have to be a kohen, you don't have to be a man. Hakol ksherim l'kadesh, With the exception, the Tanakhama says, Chutz mecheresh shote v'kotin. It has to be somebody that has das. So anybody, even a zar, even a woman, is allowed to go and do this kiddush of the mechatos, but it has to be a bar das. So that comes to exclude mecheresh shote and kotin. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees though with the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yehuda's machshav kotin. He says, no, a kotin is perfectly good, u'posel be'isha, and he doesn't allow a woman to go do the kiddush mechatos. And likewise, if a woman can't do it, so too ube androgynous. An androgynous is a person whose status is unclear. They have both the simonim of Zacharis and they have the simonim of Nakpus. They have both male and female genitalia, and therefore we're not sure if it's a man or a woman. So therefore, if a woman can't do it, so we have to be concerned that androgynous is like a woman and also can't do the kiddush mechatos. So it's a machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether a katan is good. Tanakhama says no. Rabbi Yehuda says yes. And Tanakhama says a woman is good. And Rabbi Yehuda says no, a woman or an androgynous are not good. Now, what's the rationale behind each of them choosing their shittas? My time to Rabbanu, what's the Tanakhama shita that says, Cherishot and katan, no, but a woman, yes? As the pasuk says, Dichsib, Velachu, La Tome, Me'afar, Srifas, Akatos. You're going to go sprinkle on this Tome person from the ashes of the burnt cow. So, Hanach, the Pasle Loch Biasifa, and the juxtaposition of this pasuk over here tells me that they took the ashes, so anybody that is possible for the Asifa of the ashes is also Pasle Loch B'Kiddush, is not allowed to go do the Kiddush. So, therefore, Rashi brings down, it says, V'osaf Ish Tahar, and afterwards it says, V'lochu Osam, the Bachez V'lochu. So it comes to include over here the Zor and the Isha as opposed to a Cherish, Shota, and Kotan. No. So that's the reasoning behind the Tanakhama, the Rabbanan. So this juxtaposition of the Psukim comes to exclude the Lav Bardas, the Cherish, Shota, and Kotan, but now comes to add on that it would be good by a woman or by a Zor. As the Gemara said, Hanach the Pasil Chobi Asifa, Pasil Chobi Kiddush. So those that apostle in the preceding thing for Kiddush, which we said has to be a Bardas, so excludes the Cherishot and Katan, so they are no good over here as well. But those that were good before him, such as a woman or a Zor, are good here too as well. Hanach the Achashri Loch Bi Asifa, Achashri Loch Bi Kiddush. Ah, that's the drush of the Chacham. New words of Yehuda replace the woman with the Katan, exclude the woman but allow the Katan, or Yehuda. He says, Imkein Lemakro Avalakach. Why did it say v'lokhu latamei? V'lokach comes to switch it around and say, my v'lokhu, the afilu koton, the pasli lon hosom hocha kosher, that adding on somebody, and that's adding on the koton, because the koton will eventually be a bar das. The cherishota, they're never going to be a bar das, but the koton will be a bar das, so if you're adding on one person, you're going to add on the koton over here. And teachers, the afilu koton, the pasli lon hosom, with the asifas, it's possible by a koton, nevertheless, Hocha kosher. Over here, it would be kosher. Why did it change it around for a woman? Isha minole. How do we know that the woman was good for the asifa, but is not good over here for the mixing of the mechatas with the water, the kiddush of the mechatas? Because it switches around and says v'nosan, and he shall put, below v'nosna, and not she shall put. And therefore, it comes to teach us that the woman is no good. Tosus points out, Dira Masa Vidasa Velo Nosna, he says, Afa Gab the Cholatora Kula Veloshim Zachor Nemra. You only can't darshan out something and say it only refers to a man because it uses the masculine form. Because when you're dealing with men or women, the default is to use the masculine form of the verb. So Afilu Hachi, Loma Matina Isha, the reason that we're excluding the woman over here is not really because it says Vidostan and not Velo Nosna, even though that's what the words of Gemara means, but Ella, Hecha Dechsev Ish Behedya. Since it said a man, Ishlamar Deshaini Hocha, Midishani Krobe Dibure, Dechsiv Lachu, Loshin Rabim, and used the reason in the Loshin of Rabim, and now it says Vinosan instead of Vinosnu, and therefore Lahochi Darshinan, not below Vinosno. So it said over here, Vinosan, really meaning instead of Vinosan, it should have said Vinosnu, and therefore that implies below Nosno and not a woman. That is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So it comes to include the katan from it says v'lachu instead of v'lakach, and it comes to include the woman because it says instead of v'nosnu, it says v'nosan, and therefore that's Rabbi Yehuda's drasha. Now, how do the Chacham and the Tanakhama respond to this drasha of Rabbi Yehuda? So they disagree with it, obviously. So they say, ikos rachmona v'lakach v'nosan, if both have been using the singular form, so then what Rabbi Yehuda says would taka be right. You know what I would have said then? Havamina ad shokul chad v'yoyv chad. If the Torah had written it in that form, both in the singular, I would have said it means that one person has to do it, and the same person has to both do the Asifa and the Kiddush. So therefore, to teach me that that's not correct. That's why it changed around from lakak to lakku, to tell me that no, even if two people had done the asifa, it would be not a problem. You don't need to have one person doing it, the same person doing the asifa and the nesina. Fine. Because of Rechmanu v'lakhu v'nosnu. So why don't they both say plural v'lakhu v'nosnu? So then I would have said, havamina adashakli trei, if you have a straight, that you bedavka need two people to do it, and those people have to do both the asifa and the kiddush. So therefore, in order to take it out from this idea that it needs need the same one person or the same two people to do it, one times it uses the plural form v'lakhu, and one times it uses the single form v'nosan. And therefore, teaching us dafilu shokli trei v'yoyb chai, even if two people gathered the ashes together and only one person actually did the kiddush mechatas, so then it's fine. So that's what they use the drushes of lachu instead of lakach and minasan instead of minasnu, and not for the drush of Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, they leave it the original way, and they teach us that those that are possible by asifa, the cherishot of a katan, are also going to be possible by the kiddush mayim in the mechatas, and not like Rabbi Yehuda, because they needed this to tell me that it didn't have to be one person doing the asifa and one person doing the kiddush. You can in fact have two doing one and one doing the other, and it's perfectly good. Ula continues darshining the pasuk, and he says, "Ulakach ezov v'taval b'mayim ish tahor." So it says further that you'll take the ezov and you'll taval it in the mayim. The mechatas has already had the afar of the paraduma mixed in together with the water, and then you sprinkle that on the tamei person, v'taval b'mayim ish tahor, and the tar person has to go and sprinkle it on the tamei person. Now, according to the Rabbanon, the Tanakhama here that say it's no good for a cherishot and katan to have done the asifas eforah or the kiddush of the mechatas. So Rabbanon, it tells us now, v'lokach ezov v'tava b'mayim ish tohor. The Rabbanon ish comes to now exclude in isha. So this is again, mashma motzi midei mashma v'lo isha, ish v'lo isha. And tor comes to be lahachshiras hakotan. This tar was unnecessary. Obviously, it's a tar person. So when it says tar, it comes to be marba somebody else. Who's it going to be marba here? Here it's going to be marba the kotan. Again, this is mashma motzi midei mashma. Previously, the woman was good and the kotan was not good. So this switches it around and says that the woman is no good over here and the kotan is good. Point to Rabbi Yehuda, ish comes to teach me, v'lo katan. Here, he changes it around. Previously, Rabbi Yehuda said the katan is good. So this is mashma, motzi midei mashma, telling me that the katan is no good. And the tar is, again, pumfaker. Previously, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the woman was not good to do the kiddush mechatos. But here, by saying tar, it flips it around, mashma, motzi midei mashma, to tell me that lahachshir esa isha. So the pumfaker, the two drushes over here, the Rabbanon, each of them is mashma, motzi midei mashma, are exactly the opposite. According to the Rabbanon again, it comes now to tell me that a man is only good for the sprinkling of the mechatas on the tamei person, and a katan is good, but a woman is not good. Pumfaker, what it was previously. And the same thing for Rabbi Yehuda. It comes to tell me that a woman is now good, even though she couldn't do the kiddush, she can do the sprinkling, but a katan, who previously was good, is no good over here. But Rabbi Yehuda's view is problematic because it seems to go against the following Mishnah in Par as well. The Mishnah in Par says, Meisvei, we bring a raya from this Mishnah, Hakok Sherim Lahazos. Everybody's allowed to do the Hazos Mechatos, Chutz Mitumtum, the Androgynous V'isha. Now it says, Beferish over here, that these people have ambiguous genitalia. A Tumtum has some sort of a membrane covering the genitalia. We don't know if he's a Zohar or if he's an Akeva. So it's ambiguous. Androgynous has both Simone, Zachrus, and Nakvus, has seemingly both. And a woman, clearly, all of these, the Mishnah says in Paro, are no good to do the Azar. Rabbi Yehuda just said that a woman is good to do the Azar. So Akasha, and furthermore, it says, V'katon Shiesh Bo Das, Isha Masayatu Umaza, as long as the katan has reached the age of Das, so he's not a gadol, he's a 10-year-old kid, so he understands what he's doing, so as long as a woman is helping him, certainly a man would be helping him, but even if a woman is helping him, he can do the Hazaz Mechatas. So this is exactly like the view of the Chachamim, and is totally against the view of Rabbi Yehuda, so the Mishnah in Para seems to go against Rabbi Yehuda. Now, it doesn't mention the law of Paul, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is a Tana, so there's no problem. He could argue that, but that's a Stam Mishnah. It doesn't mention that anybody disagrees with it. So, seemingly, Rabbi Yehuda agrees with it. If Rabbi Yehuda was not in agreement, he should have mentioned there that he was in disagreement with it. Now, Tosfos points out you're telling me over here, the low poly with Yehuda, but Tema, it's a big question. He says, in the Tosefta, in Maseches Parah, in the prices on Maseches Parah, it says, Tanina Behedja, the Rav Yehuda, now the gears that we have, is a machshir bekotan, says that a katan can do it, and a woman cannot do it. Vishema, hamachshir lo shvi alei habraisa. So Mestama, the one who asked this question, wasn't aware of the Tosefta that seems to, again, corroborate the Rav Yehuda does disagree with the Mishnah. In any event, that's the question that we have over here, the low poly Rav Yehuda. It seems to suggest that Rav Yehuda doesn't argue, and therefore Rav Yehuda would say that a woman is good, yet here he said the woman is no good. So Abaye reconciles it as follows. Sometimes the next pasuk comes to switch around the din from the previous din and the previous pasuk, and other times mashma mela, and sometimes it doesn't. So even though Rav Yehuda didn't specifically mention, as he does in the Tosefta, that he argues over here, so we can still say upalig. In fact, Rav Yehuda is palig on that Mishnah, and while the Mishnah says that a woman is no good, Rav Yehuda can say that a woman is good. He argues that Mishnah. Similarly, that Mishnah said that a katan is good, and Rav Yehuda here says that a katan is not good to do the hazos mechatas. Finally, we have another last drush of Ula. Ula says, in the psukim it says, v'hizo ha-tohar al ha-tomei, a person who's tar should go and sprinkle the mechatas on the tummy person, v'yom ha-shlishi u'v'yom ha-shvi'a, the third and the seventh day, and then on the seventh day he also goes to the mikvah. So it says over here, v'hizo ha-tar, a tar person has to do this. Why does it say tar? Miklal shu tummy. This teaches us the famous din that he can even be a tful yom. We had the idea that the Kohen Gadol, when he does the parah aduma, so he can be a tful yom. So this comes to teach us that also the person doing the hazos can be a tful yom. Limit al tful yom shekosher b'parah. This teaches us that we follow the prushim, the way we understand the Torah, the way that the halacha Moshe Sinai, the Torah she'bal peh, teaches us that a tful yom is kosher to do this. The tzdukim, they held no. They read the psukim literally and said that it has to be a tar person, a totally tar person. They're wrong, of course, and therefore we want to specifically point out over here this drasha that a tul yom is kosher to do the avoda by the paro. Now, Rav Asi says, Ki habu be Rav Yochanan v'Reish Lakish b'paro. When Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish were learning Masech the paro, so they were going back and forth through the psukim, trying to figure out, is there an underlying theme? Is there an underlying rule that goes across the board? And lo maski mina, they were not able to come up with an underlying theme. Ella, they came up with exactly what Ula came up with. Ella, kemai demasik tala mibei kirova. They came up with what Ula came up with, which is a limited idea. It's similar to what a fox, tala is a fox, what he can go and get from a field that's plowed. In other words, there's not much in that field, so whatever dirt he comes back with, that's all that he has. And they also came up with the idea, El Amre, Mashma Rotsi Midei Mashma, or Mashma Mimelo. They came up with the two similar ideas that Ula said, that each pasuk differentiates possibly from the previous pasuk, that's Mashma Motsi Midei Mashma. So what was true in Din or Procedure 1 is not true. The opposite could be true in Procedure 2, and sometimes no, it's the same thing in Procedure 2 as it was in Procedure 1. You have to know which one is which based upon the drushos that Ula gave. Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish had the same similar ideas. Sometimes it's Mashma Motsi Midei Mashma, and sometimes it's Mashma Mimela. Now the Gemara says, Tana Tana Kameid Rav Yochanan, one of the Amoraim. Again, whenever we say Tana Tana Kameid, the Amora, it's always talking about an Amora who was learning brises in front of that Amora. So this Amora who was learning brises in front of Rav Yochanan, Tani Tana Kameid Rav Yochanan, the Amora that was learning brises in front of Rav Yochanan, learned the following brises in front of Rav Yochanan, and he said, Kol Ashritos Ksheros Bizar. Anytime you do a shlita, it's perfectly kosher to do it by a zar, a non-kohen, with the one exception, chutz mishal para, with the exception, like Rav had held, and like other Amoraim had held, that the para aduma has to be done by a kohen, can't be done by a zar. That's what this Amora learned this price in front of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan didn't like it, and he told him, Amalei Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan told this Amora, puk go tenei livra, and learn this brisa outside, right? Brisa is outside. They're outside the standard text of the Mishnayos. That's what they call the brises outside. He said, go learn this brisa outside. In other words, I disagree with this. Don't learn it in my base medrash. It's an incorrect brisa. Lomotzina shrita b'zar psul. He says, you never ever find any case where the shrita that's done by a zar is not going to be good. Now, you might have thought that Rav Yochanan was only disagreeing with this Amora. Rav Yochanan, lomibore letano delotzayis. It wasn't only this Amora who was learning this Braisa that Rav Yochanan disagreed with. That's no big deal. That's a Talmud of his, so he certainly can disagree with him and tell him, Puk Tani Lirah, go learn it outside. Even his own Rebbe, as we'll see in a second, taught this brisa, and Rabbi Yochanan felt it was incorrect. Where do we see this? The Omer of Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan himself said, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadik, his Rebbe, Shchitas Para Bizar Psula. He also learned this same brisa that his Talmud had learned. Rabbi Yochanan had also heard it from his Rebbe. And it said that the Shchita of the Para Duma, if it's done by Zar, is no good. And nevertheless, even though Rabbi Yochanan heard it from his Rebbe, Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadik, nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan had the right. He was a Bar Hachi. Rabbi Yochanan was a Rabbi Yochanan, and he was allowed to disagree with his Rebbe. He says, my opinion is, no, even if a Zohar does the Shrita of a Paraduma, Kshera. And that's because Lo Motzinu Shrita Shepsula B'Zohar. We never find any place where the Shrita is done by Zohar is no good. So, in other words, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rab. Rab said that the paraduma, if it's shechted by Zohar, is no good. And Shmuel had said, if the paraduma is shechted by Zohar, it's good. He had dashed out the pasuk that v'shechad asol lefanav to tell us that a Zohar could shecht it in front of Elazar. So Rabbi Yochanan agrees with that drasha. But he doesn't fully agree with Shmuel. He agrees with Rab that the power of the Kohen Gadol, that in fact could be shechted by Zohar. So he agrees with Shmuel in regards to the paraduma, and he agrees with Rab in regards to the power of the Kohen Gadol. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan's ultimate answer is, Lo matzinu shchita shepsula b'zohar. We never find if a zohar shechts something that it would be possible. The shchita doesn't have to be done by a kohen. This concludes the drasha of Ula of the parsha of Para Aduma. Now we go back to our Mishnah. Remember in our Mishnah, we said that the Kohen Gadol does a second vidur. The first one that he did was for himself, really, and he did the vidur on the par of the Kohen Gadol, and now he goes back to it after the Hagrala, so then Balo Eitzel Paro Shnia. He goes back a second time to his par, that he'll eventually sheft and do the Avodah Lefnai V'Lefnim, and in the Hechel, and on the inner Mizbeach. So this par, before he goes and shefts it, he has to do another vidur. Balo Eitzel Paro Shnia. He goes to a second time, and he does the vidur on Hashem, etc., like we learned in the Mishnah. So Gemara starts off and says, "Ma'ishna bevidui rishon delo amar uvnei Aaron am kedoshecha." The first time he did the vidui, he really did it for himself and for his family. And only the second time does he do the vidui for all of the other kohanim, his brother kohanim. As the Mishnah says, "Ma'ishna bevidui sheni damar uvnei Aaron am kedoshecha." So the first time he just says, basically for his own family, for himself and his own family, and the second time is for all of the other kohanim. Why is that? So it teaches us a very famous principle, Tana de Rabbi Shmuel. They learned the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Shmuel, Kach hi midas hadin nosenes. This makes very good sense, that it should always be that a person who is tahar should go and be the defense attorney for the rest of Klal Yisrael. So mutav yavo zakai, let him first get atonement for himself by saying, listen, I messed up, I did certain thing wrong, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives him, and now, once he's zakai, mutav yavo zakai, v'yichaper alachayev. And now he can go and ask mechila for the rest of the kohanim. So it makes very good sense to have that person go and first cleanse himself, and then he's a better defense attorney for the rest of the kohanim, v'yavo chayev, v'yichaper alachayev, as opposed to, he just starts right off and says, forgive all the kohanim. Hey, who are you? You're a Tomei person yourself. You're a person who's done sins yourself. So therefore, first cleanse yourself, make yourself the vidui for yourself, and then it's more appropriate. Zakai should come and be mechaper on the other kohanim that are not yet zakai. Okay, now we go to the next Mishnah. Again, continuing in the avoda of Yom Kippur by the Kohen Gadol. So now, after he did the two viduis on his par, he goes and shechts it, shechoto. He goes and shechts his par, and he doesn't do the entire shechita, just like the Mefarshim bring down by the Korban Tov and Shel Shachris. He just does 50% plus of each pipe. He shechts a little bit more than half of the trachea and of the esophagus, of the kohen and the voshet. And then another kohen finishes off, he does the marika, finishing off, it is the mitzvah to get out all the blood. It's not ma'akev if it's not done by the kohen gadol. So it's over here. He does at least 50% of each of the pipes of his par, and this way he has to do the Kabbalah, so another kohen can go finish that off and do the marik over here, and this kohen gadol goes and collects the blood in the klishari, so kibel b'mizrok es domo, he goes and collects the blood from this par that he just shechted, the par kohen gadol, and he's not going to use it yet, because the sprinklings come after he does the aktoras aktoras lefnai v'lefnim, so v'nosno, he gives over this blood, l'mishu memaris bo al horovad horvi she b'hechal. He gives it over to another kohen to stir it, because it's not allowed to congeal. If it congeals, you can't do the zrika with it. So therefore, somebody has to constantly be stirring it, and by the motion of the stirring it, it won't congeal. this person, well, it's that it was placed in a sort of a container that didn't have a flat bottom, so it couldn't be put down. He'd have to constantly hold it so it didn't spill, and he'd be constantly stirring it, so therefore we could guarantee that it wouldn't congeal. And our Mishnah says that this was placed on the Rovat Harvi, on the stones that were made out of marble, on the fourth stone that was Sheh Bahechel, inside the Hechel. Now the Gemara is going to question this, and we'll have a lot of different opinions, and even more opinions amongst the Rishonim, as to where exactly this was. Ultimately, the Gemara is going to suggest that it wasn't in the Hechal itself, although there is an opinion that says it was in the Hechal. But most seem to say that it wasn't in the Hechal itself. We'll get to this in the Gemara. Now the reason why, I didn't read the words in the Mishnah, why he's giving it over to this Kohen to stir it, is Kadesh Lo Yikosh, it shouldn't congeal, and it wouldn't be able to do the Zrika if it had congealed. Now, he then goes and gets the coals, and he's going to get the incense to do the haktoris, haktoris, lefnai, lefnim. Just to remind ourselves, there was a regular daily ketoris that was done along with the tamid shal shachris and the tamid shal bein harbayim, and this was a regular standard thing that the Kohen Gadol didn't do. The regular Kohen could do this. On Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol did all of the activities, so he did not only the regular korban tamid, but he did the regular haktoris, haktoris on the inner mizbeach, in the morning and in the afternoon, but then there was the additional special haktoris haktoris lefnai v'lefnim that was done inside the Holy of Holies. So now that's what we're referring to. Notal machta, the Kohen Gadol took a special shovel, we'll describe it in a moment in the Mishnah, v'yalu l'rosh mizbeach, and he went up on top of the mizbeach to go and get hot coals to use to eventually burn the ktoris lefnai v'lefnim. Again, we pointed out many times that Stukim said you went into the lefnai v'lefnim with it already burning the incense, and we hold and the Kabbalah is that you only light it inside Lefnai V'Lefnim. But you need to get coals, so he went up to the top of the Mizbeach to get coals. He took the shovel, Ba'al Rosh Mizbeach, he went to a certain pyre on top of the Mizbeach. We'll discuss this later in the Gemara and tomorrow's Shir as well. Ufino Gecholim Elech Elech, he moved the coals about to make sure he gets nice hot coals that are from the bottom. The Chosem and Hamucholos Hapnimios, he takes the most innermost coals that are almost all burnt up, but they're not yet charcoal, they're not totally burnt up, so they're still going to be able to give off a lot of heat and a lot of fire. The Yorat, and he takes them in the shovel and he comes down from the Mizbeach, V'nicha al harovat harivi shabazara, and he puts it on the fourth rovat, on the fourth marble stone. Now here it says in the Azara. Now there is an opinion that says it was the exact same place as the rovat above, because as we'll see, there's an opinion that says that when he said the rovat harivi shabahechel, it didn't mean in the hechel, it meant in the Azara. So some suggest that this is the exact same place, but others say no, this is a different place. This was on the fourth rovat that was in the Azara. Now, Mishnah continues and says, "B'chol yom haya choseh b'shal kesef u'ma'ar b'shal shalzov." The normal procedure every day when you're getting the coals to burn the regular incense of the korban tamid shel shachris and the korban tamid shel bein harbayim was they would go take a silver shovel and they would go get coals with a silver shovel, because the silver would not burn up as fast as the gold, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu was chos on Mamon Shel Klal Yisrael, so he used a silver shovel every day, and Uma'ara B'Sol Shazov, and they would then take it and pour it into a golden shovel, which the Kohen would then go take to the Hechal and do the Haktoris Haktoris of Shachris Tomid and the Tomid Shel Bein Harbayim. But on this day, Bayom Chose B'Shal Zov, the Kohen Gadol took the shovel of gold. Some suggest this was not only for the special Haktoris Haktoris of Lai Lefnim, but this was even for the regular Ketoris that was done for the Korban Tamid Shel Shachris and the Korban Tamid Shel Bein Harbayim. Bayom Chose B'Shal Zov, so he'd use a golden shovel the entire way through. He didn't take a silver shovel and pour it into the golden shovel. Again, we want to minimize everything that the Kohen Gadol does means Mishum Chushaso, because he's doing all the activities, so we want to make it as simple as possible. And as well, we're not concerned on this day using a golden shovel, because it's only a one-day event, so it's not going to get ruined. So he uses this, Ubaya Machnis, and this golden shovel he would eventually go and bring, certainly for the Haktoris Haktoris of Nai B'Lefnim, he would go and carry this golden shovel in with the coals. Could carry the coals in his hand, he had to carry the incense in his hands, below Chofnov, and he needed to carry as well the shovel. And the Gemara will describe later on that this is one of the most difficult activities to actually do the Ketoris. He's all by himself. He doesn't have anybody to assist him, and he has to hold the shovel as well as both of his hands full with the Melo Chofnov of Ketoris. So both of his hands are full, and he has to hold the shovel. How does he exactly do this? This was one of the most difficult activities in the Beis HaMikdosh that the Kohen Gadol had to do on Yom Kippur. In any event, the Mishnah contrasts the regular day activities with the Yom Kippur activities, and it tells us, V'chol Yom, on a regular day, Chosu B'Shal Arba Kabin, they would go, whoever was doing the coin that was going to collect the incense So he would go collect the coals to burn the incense of the Tamid Shul Shachris, the Tamid Shul Ben Abayim, and he would go collect Arba Kabin, 4 kabs worth of coals, and he would pour it from the silver shovel into a golden shovel, Umarel, it's Shoshes Kabin, and would pour it into a shovel that can contain 3 kabin. He wanted to have it a full amount, so he took 4 kabin, so he definitely would have enough and overflow to the 3 kabin. But today, we just allow him to go get 3 kabin. We don't want to tire him out. So we let him do just 1 step, and we'll assume he gets the full 3 kabin with 1 step. Likewise, Ubaya Matnis, he will go take this golden shovel inside the Lefnai Lefnim. We want to keep it as simple as possible. Rav Yossi disagrees. Rav Yossi, every day, they wouldn't take 4 kabin. That's 2/3 of a saw, but they would take a full saw, 6 kabin, the 6 kav to a saw. They take a full saw in the first shovel, and they would pour it into the second shovel, umar b'soch shloshes kabin. And this way, they definitely would overflow and have at least 3 kabin in the second shovel. And today, on Yom Kippur, by Yom Chosu b'shloshes kabin, he agrees that the Kohen Gadol would just take the golden shovel and just get the 3 kabin directly, ubo yamachnas. And he would agree also that they took that golden shovel inside lefnai v'lefnim to go and do the haktaras haktaras lefnai v'lefnim. Furthermore, and every day, they took a heavy shovel because it's 1 kohen and it's not necessarily the older kohen gadol. So it could be a healthy young kohen, so it's no big deal if it was a heavy shovel. He could easily carry it. But today, because of chush of the kohen gadol, by Yom Kala, they took a very light shovel. So it wouldn't be so heavy and hard for the kohen gadol to go do the avodah. Likewise, every day the handle was a short handle. It's more difficult to go pick it up. He couldn't lean it underneath his armpit if it had a long handle to help support it. So every day they just had a short handle. We're not concerned again with the chush of the Kohen Gadol on a regular daily basis. But Hayom, on Yom Kippur, because we're concerned that the chush of the Kohen Gadol, he's going to be too weak to do all the activities, we try to make it as easy as possible, and it's easier to do with a long shovel. He can use it to support it underneath his armpit, so therefore it will help him carry it. Likewise, with Zahava Yarok, they used a certain type of Yarok, is an interesting color. Yarok can sometimes mean green, sometimes mean yellow, can mean brown. It can mean almost any color under the context that it's in. So here it means a yellow type of a gold. Zahava Yarok. That was the regular golden shovel that they used every day. Bayom Odom, today was a higher quality gold, what's called a red gold. And this is the opinion, Divi Rabbi Menachem. This is the opinion of Rabbi Menachem. Some suggest that nobody disagrees with him, it's just telling us the opinion of Rabbi Menachem. Others say no, that somebody disagreed with him, it's just not listed in our Mishnah. Likewise, Vuchol Yom Makriv Pras B'Shachrus Pras B'Nabayim. As I mentioned already several times, every day there was Haktaras Haktaras by the Korban Tamid Shel Shachrus and Korban Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim. And those two were also done in Yom Kippur. But in Yom Kippur, we had the third additional Haktaras Haktaras, Ayom Mosif Lo Chofta. There's a special Lefnai B'Lefnim Ketaras that the Kohen Gadol brought, the 2 handfuls of the Ketaras that he had to bring inside, while he was also simultaneously bringing inside the shovel, because nobody else could join him. Then it says that every day, B'chol Yom Ha'Sadaka, every day, the Ketaras was finally ground up. But on this day, as we say every morning in the Kabbana section of the Davening, Ayom Daka Min Ha'Daka, they would especially grind it up extra well, and Rashi brings down this Ketoris and Lo Chofet that the Kohen Gadol brought Lefnai B'Lefnim, Hayamachzir Erev Yom Kippurim L'Machteshes, Erev Yom Kippur, he didn't do it on Yom Kippur, Erev Yom Kippur, they would bring it back to the grinder, V'Shochach Ko Hodek, and they would re-grind it to get it even more fine. Now, furthermore, the Mishnah says, B'chol Yom Kohanim Olim B'Mizrach Shel Kevesh. The other difference is between Yom Kippur and every day. Every day, normally, the Kohanim would go up on the Mizrach side of the Kevesh. The Kevesh and the Mizbeach was in a north-south orientation. The ramp was in the most southern aspect of the Azara. As you went up the ramp, you're going from south towards north. The Mizbeach was more north than the ramp. Again, we have 3 opinions as to the Mizbeach was all in the south, all in the north, or half in the south, half in the north. In any event, as you're going up the ramp, you're going from a southern to a northern area. And then they would go up always all Pinoshata Pone Yomin, have to go always to the right. So therefore, as you went up the ramp, you wanted to go turn right. So therefore, you went up on the eastern side of the ramp, which is you're going in the south to northern orientation, your right will be on the eastern side. So Hoyom Kohanim Olim B'Mizrach Shel Kevesh, Mizrach Shel Kevesh, they would go up on the eastern side of the ramp, and they would do whatever they had voted they had to do up on the top of the Mizbeach, the Yardim B'Marav, and since you're always turning to the right, so they'd come down on, as they're turning around in a counterclockwise direction around the Mizbeach, so they would come down on the western aspect of the ramp, that would be to their right. And therefore, that's on the most western side of the ramp. So they would go up on the eastern side of the ramp, and they'd come down on the western side of the ramp. As Rashi points out, they wouldn't cross over the middle of the ramp. It's pasnish to do so. That's every day. However, Bayom, today, Kohen Gadol, Ola B'Emtzah V'Yorbemtzah, Kohen Gadol goes right up in the middle, and he comes down right in the middle. There's no problem that he's going from one side to the other side of the ramp to do different parts of the avoda. This is Bapumbi, this is in great public aggrandizement of the activities of the day, and therefore he goes right up in the middle, comes right down in the middle. Rehuda Omer, Rehuda says, La'olam Kohen Gadol, Ola B'Emtza, V'Yor B'Emtza. This is not only Yom Kippur, Kohen Gadol is special. He always gets to go up in the middle. He doesn't have to go always on the right side when he's going up and on the left side coming down. He gets to always go up in the middle, come down in the middle. Nothing to do with Yom Kippur. This is doing with the Kohen Gadol. Likewise, L'chol Yom Kohen Gadol, Mekadish Yodav Raglav in HaKiyar. In general, the Tanakhama says that the Kohen Gadol was like everybody else, that he had to wash Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim before he did any Avodah. So he did it with a Kiyar, like everybody else did it. But on Yom Kippur, he did it with a special keton. He did it with a special container of water. He had a special golden container that he poured on his hand and his foot. On his right hand, his right foot. His left hand, his left foot. And that was how he did Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim on Yom Kippur. But it was only on Yom Kippur he did this. The rest of the time he did it with the regular kiyar. So says the Tanakhama. And again, here, Rav Yehuda disagrees. Rav Yehuda Omer, Rav Yehuda says, no. Li'olam, Kohen Gadol, Mekadish Yodav Raglav, Min HaKiton Shel Zohav. He says, at all times, the Kohen Gadol was Mekadish Yodav Raglav from this special container of water, this golden container of water. He always did it that way. He never did it from the kiyar. That's for the regular Kohanim. The Kohen Gadol has his own special stuff. Finally, the Mishnah concludes and says, B'chol Yom, Hayusham Arba Marochos. Every day, on top of the Mizbeach, we'll see there's a three-way machlokas. Over here, the Tanakhama, which is Remeya, says that every day there were normally four fires, pyres, on top of the Mizbeach. We'll see in the Gemara what those purposes of those four pyres are. And on Yom Kippur, there was a fifth fire, special to bring the Ketoris down for the Lefnai V'Lefnim HaKetoris HaKetoris. Yom Chomesh, so there's an extra one on Yom Kippur. Dear Remeya, this is a Tanakhama, Remeya's opinion. Rav Yossi disagrees. Rav Yossi Meir, every day with three, not four. B'chol Yom Shalosh. We'll see which one he doesn't agree with. And on Yom Kippur, there's a special one, Vayom Arba. Oh. And Rav Yehuda says, no, every day there are only two, B'chol Yom Shtayim. We'll see which one he disagrees with. And today on Yom Kippur, there's a third one, Vayom Shalosh. There's a special extra one for the Akhtaris Akhtaris. So each of them agrees there's a special one for the Akhtaris Akhtaris. Each of them would be there's a special Maracha Dola and a Maracha Shnia, and they'll only disagree as to whether there's a third and a fourth pyre on a regular basis. We get to the Gemara tomorrow, and Yitz Hashem, we'll see this. Gemara starts off now and says, V'oksiv, it says, V'chol Adam lo yeh b'yom mo'ay. How can you start off the Mishnah and tell us that they put the Dam down in a place where it could be stirred in the Heichal? Right, we said in the Mishnah, Shachatu v'kibah b'mizruch esdamo, v'nosu l'mishu m'mariz bo, al harov ad harvi, sheba heichal. Now, he's going to be standing there and stirring it until after the Ketoris HaKetoris l'fnai v'lefnim is done. And the Pasuk says that nobody's allowed to stand in the Ohel Moed during this period of time. So how can you tell me that the Kohen is standing there stirring the blood so it doesn't congeal? Nobody's allowed to be there. So, the Gemara therefore says, Taka, you read the Mishnah wrong, Amar Yehuda. The Mishnah should be read, Tini Shel Heichal. Not, as the Girsa that we had was, Al Arov Ari She B'Heichal, but you read it, Tini Shel Heichal, meaning that you go outside the Heichal, and you go to the fourth row outside the Heichal. And you have many different opinions as to where this was. You have an opinion that says it was in the Ulam. The Heichal is the Heichal, and the Ulam is separate from the Heichal. So you went outside the Pesach of the Heichal, four of these marble stones, and that's where he was in the Ulam. Ulam is not a problem. Chol Yabo Moed doesn't include the Ulam. Others say, no, that includes the Ulam as well. So you go from the Pesach of the Ulam, and you go four of these rovads, these marble four tiles, so you go to the fourth one. Others say, no, that the area between the Ulam and the Zbeach was a series of steps, and there were four platforms, four flat parts. You had the first flat part, then you went up some steps, you had the second flat part, then you went up some steps, you had a third flat part, then you went up some steps, you had a fourth flat part, and that is where this was. So you have many, many different opinions, and then you even have one opinion that says, no, B'chol Odom Liyeh B'ol Moed doesn't include somebody that has to be there. And in fact, there's one opinion that says the Tani Shel Heichal means no, Bedavki in the Heichal, because he had to be in the Heichal. He was doing a mitzvah of stirring the blood. So therefore, this din, the Cholad Moliyah Ba'al Moed, doesn't apply to him. It's perfectly permissible for him to be there. So we have many, many different opinions as to how to understand where this stirring the blood took effect. Some suggest it was actually in the Heichal, minority opinion. Others say it was between the Ulam and the Heichal. Others say it was between the Mizbeach and the Ulam, possibly in two different places between the Mizbeach and the Ulam. Now the Gemara continues, says, Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in the following Braisa, V'chol Adam lo yeh b'yom moed. We just brought down this pasuk that says nobody else is allowed to be in the Yom Moed. The Kohen Gadol is the only one that's allowed to be there. The other day we had Shimon HaTzadik, he saw the Kvod Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu with him, but not even a Malach is allowed to be there, certainly not a human being. We turn to Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. So I might have thought that that includes any place in the entire Azara. Yochel Afilu Bazara, that you have to clear out the entire Azara. Therefore, Talmud Lomer says, be all moed. No, it's only in the all moed, in Nazareth, they're allowed to be there. No, Eli Ella be all moed, Shem Midbar. That tells me only in the Mishkan, in the all moed of the Mishkan, in the Midbar. How do we know that in the all moed, when the Mishkan went to Shiloh, and Ubeis Olomim, when it went to the Beis HaMikdash, Minayin, that it means as well there, that's not all moed technically. So how do we know it means the Heichal, that nobody's allowed to be in the Heichal of Shiloh, or the Heichal of the Beis HaMikdash as well? Talmud Lomer, because it says the extra word, Bakodesh. Pasuk continues, "Haladom lo yeva ol moed bevavo lechaper bakodesh atzei so." So therefore, bakodesh comes to tell me that even in Shilo and even in the Beis Hamikdash, nobody's allowed to be there. No, eli ela b'shas haktara. Maybe that's only during the time of the haktara. How do we know that when he brings the blood offerings of the power of the Kohen Gadol and the Sar Lashem b'shas matan dom minayin, that is also nobody allowed to be there. Tamar lomar bevavo lechaper. When he's doing the chapara refers to the blood sprinklings. So no, that tells me Eli Ela B'chnin Sasso. That's only when he goes in to go apply the blood offerings. Once he's done that, maybe the Kohanim can come inside. Bitzisasso Minayin. How do we know that they're not allowed to go in there even after he until he totally comes out? Talmud Lomer, it says I'd say so until he totally comes out. Now it says V'chiper Bato V'ad Beis V'ad Kol Ka Yisrael. It then says he's doing this kapara on behalf of all of Kla Yisrael. So kaparoso kodemus lekaparos beso, and kaparos beso kodemus lekaparos echov hakohanim, the kaparos echov hakohanim kodemus lekaparos kol ka Yisrael. This goes in accord with what we said previously. The first you get kapar for yourself, then you get kapar for his family and the other kohanim, and then only after they're all tar can you get kapar for all of Kla Yisrael. This fits in very, very well with what we said previously. This is a very good break point. We'll stop the show over here. This concludes today's share.